This is the ZBooks Successful Authors Podcast with Eric Z. We're going to learn the truth about ebooks.
Welcome to ZBooks Successful Authors Podcast. And today I have my hero, my benchmark, one of the first guys that actually got me into ebooks. I have the Grand Poobah, the number one, the head honcho, the big cheese, the big kahuna, the Muhammad Ali of independent publishing. I have none other than Steve Scott. Welcome, Steve Scott. How you doing?
Good. That's quite the introduction, the Muhammad Ali of indie publishing. That's a lot to live up to.
Hey, it's true, you know, because how many books do you have, like 46?
In the 60-ish area, but, you know, some of those are test books and bundles and various other things that I've tried over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you published, what, like 10 per year?
Yes, at one point I was publishing around 10 per year, like specifically when I got started in 2012 and 13. I was like really focused on keeping production schedule. I have definitely slowed down ever since then, but I would like to think my book's a little more in-depth now, a little more actionable. So I would say now it's maybe 5 or 6 a year. At the most.
Well, that's Muhammad Ali, as far as I'm concerned. You know.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, what was your first book? What got you into ebooks and publishing?
This was probably, I would say, February 2012. I went to a conference and I kind of heard about the advent of Kindle publishing and self-publishing, and I saw that there might have been an opportunity for kind of taking my existing blog content and turning it into a book. So I did the mistake that I see people doing all the time, but I made the same mistake that a lot of people do. It's I just took a bunch of old blog posts, threw it together, and it was something like 55 ways to make money online, because I did have a internet marketing blog. And way before that, for like 6 years leading up to self-publishing, I did run an internet business that I was kind of able to enjoy the laptop lifestyle. So I was like, oh, I could take some old existing content and throw it up on a book, and then I'm going to make piles of cash and lots of traffic. And honestly, the book really went nowhere. It wasn't until I published my second and third book that I really started to understand the process and the marketing behind it, like the fact that you can't just throw something up on pretty much any internet property, including Amazon, expect it to do well. So that was the first one.
And you were at the Air Force at this point?
No, actually, the Air Force was I'm kind of aging myself, but the Air Force I was in – I left in 2001, actually right before 9/11. Ah. So this would have been almost 11 years after I got out of the Air Force. So I had a couple jobs that kind of never went nowhere. And I did have a pretty successful business from 2005-ish to 2006-ish onwards, where I was able to support myself just from various internet businesses.
So we're kind of jumping around in the questions now, but so.
No worries.
Yeah. All right. So, so we're in your origins story right now. So, what is your number one tip for beginning authors right now, if they're beginning?
I looked at the questions ahead of time. I tried to boil it down to one tip. I'm going to have two tips. I'm going to cheat a little
Excellent.
Bit.
Excellent. Yes.
I would say the most important tip is kind of laying the foundation. Actually, I'm going to say three tips. I'm sorry, but I'm going to.
It's okay.
Control and dominate the question. So the first tip would be to lay the foundations. And specifically what I mean by that is, even before you write book number one, you want to make sure that you're in the right market. So you want to make sure that you're in something that is profitable. And there's actually a pretty popular book called Right to Market by Chris Fox. And I think he does an excellent job of explaining what that means to write in a market. But you want to find an area where people are spending money that they're –
I'm sorry, what was his name?
Chris Fox.
Fox, okay.
Yeah. C-H-R-I-S and last name Fox, F-O-X.
Okay.
He has a concept called Right to Market. And he that book is primarily written for the fiction audience, but I think it specifically applies to nonfiction as well. And you want to make sure that people are actually spending money in your particular genre or market. And what the rule that we like to use is called the rule of 30,000. So you want to look at books that are around a central topic. Like I pick habits, but if you're into the paleo diet or dating advice, you want to just poke around on Amazon and look at books. And you want to find at least a couple of books that have under a 30,000 sales ranking. That's around 5 to 7 copies a day, which for me, that's enough to say, all right, this is a good book idea. I should just go with that. So mm-hmm. when I mean laying the foundation, just basically make sure that this is a market that people are willing to buy books about.
Right.
Then from there, what you want to do, and this is all stuff you need to do before even writing book number one. So the second tip I would say is you want to go out and create a lead magnet, just simply a free piece of content. It could be a tip sheet. It could be just a short book, something that you give away for free, and you want to tie that into an email marketing service that could be I'm trying to remember the one that's free.
MailChimp.
Yeah. Yep.
Gumroad.
MailChimp.com. I never use MailChimp, but people swear by it. So there's that. I use AWeber. There's ActiveCampaign. There's a lot of different email marketing programs. And then just give away that book for free to build people into your funnel. And then the tip number three would be just to go out there and write one book after another. And honestly, I that's really what I did for the first couple of years. Every time I came out with a book, I would just email my list, and it just kind of built on itself. And eventually got to the point where every time I came out with a book, I was guaranteed to get a certain number of views and purchases. And that just kind of laid a huge foundation of my entire business.
So what do you say to the people now that, I mean, I see this every day still. Oh, that was in 2012 in the golden years of Amazon. That doesn't work anymore.
I would call BS to that because I just launched a book a couple weeks ago, and it's still sitting around the 250 paid ranking, and it's been a month, and it's done really well. So I call it BS, and that's the only thing which we'll probably get to in a bit. The only thing I did differently than the kind of foundational stuff is I use a little bit of marketing with some various websites to help get some extra promotion. But for the most part, it was just leveraging our email list, and that still works. It still works really well.
Is that the Miracle Morning book?
Actually, I launched that. I think I launched that 4 or 5 months ago. This was Declutter Your Mind. This was
a
book that my business partner Barry Davenport. She wrote the majority of it. And
nice. I've seen all your books, but you've got 60 of them, so it's hard to keep them apart. You know,
it's a lot of them, and I don't want to sit there and just rattle off these book titles and make it seem like I'm just kind of trying to promote every single book I have in my catalog.
Nah. So what is your number one tip for intermediate and advanced authors to take their books to the next level?
I would say from there, that's another hard one to answer. But what I'm starting to see that is the fact that it is getting competitive on Amazon. Just like you say, people say stuff doesn't work anymore. So the one thing I would really recommend is to start to fully understand all these different book promotional platforms. Mm-hmm. For instance, there's BookBub, which is if you land a BookBub deal, that could really be a significant positive impact on your book sales. And I would constantly try to apply to BookBub. But what BookBub also has, which is they haven't really accepted to a large audience yet, but if you can get part of their partner program and actually run pay-per-click campaigns on your individual books, that's a good way where you can take a book that's not selling well and generate a little bit of extra income for your books. And another platform I would recommend is Amazon Marketing Services. And Derek Depker actually, he kind of got me into the way you can fully leverage the sponsored listings. And that's if you ever look up on pages now on the Amazon Kindle, there's a row of books just called sponsored ads. And those are all just run through the Amazon Marketing Services.
Interesting.
So for the intermediate advanced people, if you could really understand your market, so you definitely want to drill down and figure out exactly what books are similar to yours, what authors are similar to yours, what keywords, that sort of thing. And you and I were geeking out about Dave Chesson's tool.
Yeah.
That might be a good resource for figuring out kind of what's going on with your marketplace. And
there's
also I think it's Kindle Spy. Does a good job of kind of analyzing. I'm terrible with keyword.
It's all right.
I guess overall, just like if you could figure out how to do paid traffic, that would really be the best way. Kind of the 80-20 rule. That's the best way to generate a lot of sales, even if your books don't really have that many sales currently.
So tell me about this. You just mentioned the BookBub Partner Program. What is that? How do you access that?
Let me, as I'm kind of filibustering as I'm typing it, you can hear me typing in the background. This is a live actual thing happening.
Yeah. And it's funny because you just mentioned Derek Dupker and I just interviewed him
nice.
And, so the sponsors listing is very interesting. So,
He's one who got me into it. So I don't want to, whenever I get an idea from someone, I want to make sure that they get the proper credit.
Yeah.
But yeah, He definitely has a lot more to say about, so I would recommend anything he says.
I'm going to have to interview that young man again.
Okay, so the website, if you go to bookbub.com, that's bookbub.com /partners, there's an application process, and it is one of these kind of you sign up and you pray. And I just, as soon as I heard about it, like 5 minutes later, they made a public a press release announcement, and I signed up 5 minutes later. So maybe that's why I got in, because I was like, all right, this has to be good. So I got in pretty quickly, but I know that they're taking their time rolling the program out. They're not just accepting everyone. So I would say try to do anything you can to get into good graces of BookBub, because that's that really can make a huge difference in your business.
Did you hear? I just discovered Goodreads is now branching out into something similar to BookBub. They're going to do the email promotions. It's brand new. Have you seen this yet?
I have heard of it, and I should have followed up with it, but. No, I haven't. I've heard of it. I've done nothing with that information. So
looks like Jeff Bezos is getting on it, and because BookBub, it looks like direct competition to BookBub. So I'm going to be in there when they open up. Right now, it's only open to publishers, big publishing houses. But it says right in their blog where you go to apply, it says we're going to open this up to independents soon. So
nice. Yeah, just like you said, I would say if Jeff Bezos says we're trying to compete, then this is a good thing. Without even looking at, I would imagine it's probably going to be a major player in the space.
Oh, I'm on it. Once they open it up, man, I'm going to try to get in there early. So this is my favorite topic, because we're talking about it, laying the foundation, making sure the 30,000 rule, making sure you're in a profitable niche. And so I'm really into book validation. Which is just a fancy name for testing, you know. And so how do you validate a book? Is this like a really go, no-go gate, or is it just your 30,000 rule? Or
yeah, and actually I totally love the interview with Dave Chesson, but I don't really do what he does. And I think like his stuff is golden, because you know for almost exactly that this is going to be a slam dunk book. Yeah. I kind of – a lot of times I just go with my gut. And if it's a topic I'm interested in and it's something I feel I can add expertise in, I will just go with the book. Now, that's what I used to do. And after a couple of books completely tanked, I'm like, all right, maybe I should figure this stuff out before I just go publish whatever I want. So what I am starting to do is I do survey my email list, and I'll use a I think SurveyMonkey is the one I use, SurveyMonkey.com. So I'll email my list. I'm like, all right, here are three book ideas. Which one grabs you the most? And I'll just have them vote straight up. And usually the whatever gets the highest percentage of interest, I will just go ahead and write that book. Now, the benefit of this is you can kind of create very interesting, unique ideas. And a lot of times some of my best-selling books just come from just kind of something I do in my own personal development I thought might make a good subject for a book. But then there's other times, like I guess the best example is I have two books. One of them was Habit Stacking. And that's something I do every day. And that book took off and made a good amount of money. But then there's a book called The Accountability Manifesto, which is about building accountability in your life. And that book, I still don't think I've made my money back from that book. So those were two kind of incidences where I'm like, oh, this would be an interesting topic. And I just went with my gut, and both had completely different results.
The one that didn't make money, did you poll your list?
I did not. So that's probably the process. That's probably the misstep I took in my process, is not at least reaching out. And actually since then, that's why I always make sure that I email my list with any book idea, just to make sure that it's something that people even want.
Yeah.
Because I didn't do that. And with my launch campaign, like the first day, I'm like, uh-oh, this is bad, because I know what my normal numbers are. Yeah. And it was not doing anywhere near that. I'm like, this is not good.
Yeah, that sucks. Oh, well. But SurveyMonkey, but they're not free. They're only free for the first 100 answers or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's other. You know what? It might have been SurveyGizmo. I recommend both sites, and I've used both sites, and I tend to interchange them.
Yeah.
I know I spent $30 on that, but for me, $30 to run a poll, even to one poll to my audience, is totally worth it, because that could mean tens of thousands of dollars down the road. So I don't mind spending a little bit of money up front.
But and actually, go ahead.
I tend to talk fast, so I do apologize. and actually, another service that I use is called PickFu, PickFu.com.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an anonymous audience, so you can do the same thing. But if you don't have a built-in audience, you can use PickFu and then poll them. and get really anonymous and really sometimes very brutal feedback, but you want that brutal feedback ahead of
right. But I don't understand what the advantage is over just a simple Google form survey. Google surveys, they're free, you know.
You know, you're probably right.
I don't know.
They have nice pictures and graphs. I like pictures and graphs. They do it in a pretty little package. Actually, truth be told, I've never really even heard of Google surveys. How bad is that? So I didn't even know that was an option. So I looked into it.
Yeah, I love Google Docs. They've got forms, sheets, all that stuff. But so validation is a fine art. It's one of the things I'm always going on about. I'm putting it in my my online course that I'm developing right now. And so, okay, so you survey your list. And anything else?
I would say from there, I survey my list, and once I get an idea, and this is the beauty of having an email list. Mm-hmm. Once I actually establish an idea, I just ask one open-ended question. I'll just follow up with a second email. Hey, it seems like 40% of everyone wants to learn more about this particular topic. Can you tell me your number one challenge? And I just leave it very open-ended. There's no there's no survey software. Just reply back to this email and tell me about what's going on. And then I have my virtual assistant. She'll compile all these answers into a single document. Uh-huh. And this is probably the most golden thing you'll ever possibly get, because you know exactly what's going on in people's lives.
Yeah.
And this kind of relates to a book called Asked by Ryan Levesque.
Yeah.
And he does a good job of like, all right, take all these responses, put it in like four or five buckets. And that's really what you need to talk about with whether a product or service. So I just kind of follow his lead. And within
so
my
interesting, book,
I just
you
make
mentioned
sure.
that. I just got the book and I'm doing it. And are you implementing it in your funnels?
I don't really. I'm building funnels, but I'm not so funnel obsessed as you need to be when you have a $500 product. When you have just a bunch of books, I don't really feel I need too much of a funnel. But I am going to start building out funnels for future books, and that's something I might consider. But I don't want to get to the point where I have 7 to 10 follow-up campaigns just to warm people up to ask them to buy a $2.99 book. I think that's maybe not the best use of your email space.
Yeah, no. Before I get to the next question, one just popped up. What is your number one email list building method when you use the 80-20 filter?
I would say an offer in the front and the back of the book. Once I build out this funnel, I'm actually going to have it frequently mentioned throughout the book as well. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be more along the lines. Like I'm starting to realize the value of having email subscribers. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to build a small membership site for each one of these books. And again, you want to give credit to where it's deserved. I know this is something Pat Flynn did with Will It Fly, and he actually built a whole resource section with all these different things and companion pieces to his book. So I think that's something you can do, even with a book that only takes you a couple of months to write, is you can sit down and create a couple little extra a couple of extra things that people will like and get benefit from and put it on a small teachable website. So probably what I'll do is every time I have a free offer in the book, I'll say, all right, just go to whatever the website is, just the resource section, sign up, and you'll get all these freebies in one central location.
Yeah. But did you mean also a Facebook group for each book? Because, I mean, you got 60 books.
Oh, no. Definitely.
Okay.
I might create like a Fans of Habits Facebook group eventually, but mm-hmm. I know, and I think you're going to talk about time management later on. I know social media is, for me, it's the biggest productivity killer.
Yeah.
So I try to be very mindful of how I interact on Facebook, because you could easily spend 4 hours a day on Facebook. So I try not to do too much with it, because I know I want to focus on writing and marketing books, not sitting on Facebook all day long.
Okay, you just said it. So how do you pack more value, more time into 1 hour?
I'm very much a scheduling out, blocking time type of person. So I have a block of schedule every single morning to write for at least 30 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. And then I just really like the Pomodoro technique, where you sit down and you set your timer for 25 minutes and you focus completely on the task and then turn off the timer and take a quick break. So I try to do that for everything. So I try to get my writing done right when I need to write, and I market when I need to market. And I just schedule things out. So whenever I'm doing a specific activity, I'm running a timer in the background and making sure I'm just focused on that and nothing else. And if I'm not on Facebook, I have the Facebook tab closed out. And when I'm not in Gmail, I close it out. And I only check Gmail a couple, like once or twice a day. And even then, I have a little autoresponder sequence saying that there's certain types of emails I just won't respond to, and it's kind of a jerk response nowadays, but I had to reach the point where there's certain things I just can't get to, and I just I guess to kind of fully answer your question is I just really do a lot of time blocking and make sure I just focus on that one particular activity.
Yeah, I like the Pomodoro technique. It's like a race against the clock, you know?
Yes, it is.
Did the Air Force help you with that discipline?
I would say it was the start of it, but it's been a constant evolution ever since I got out of the Air Force. But I would say when I went into the Air Force, I was kind of a knucklehead. I got out of college, and you know, I didn't really put a lot of effort into college. And when I went to the Air Force, it did teach that kind of the foundation of, all right, you show up at your job every single day. You make sure you put in your work. And it really did teach that discipline, but I would say almost having to rely completely on myself for my own income when I finally started having a full-time income from internet business stuff, that's what taught me the importance of what's important and what's not important, and I really try to be very mindful of that.
Okay, so totally tangential here. What rank were you in the Air Force?
I was an E3, so I didn't really get very far. I was a Airman First Class, I think.
Airman First Class. Ah, okay. Well, you were above me.
Oh, okay. I don't have a cool, long, illustrious military career like again, Dave Chesson. He's done a lot of cool things. I put in my time, but it wasn't really a major part of my life.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I had one stripe, so, you know, you're still above me. And Dave Chesson's an officer, although he just left, right? He's going full-time e-books and entrepreneur. That's cool.
Yeah, he emailed me the other day, and I just responded back to him this morning. I think he left a couple of weeks ago, so he's full-time. He's done a lot of great things part-time. I can only imagine what he'll do once he's able to fully immerse himself in the whole world.
Maybe that's a topic for another podcast when we get on more onto the entrepreneurial tangent. But because, I mean, I can talk to you for three or four hours, but I will not do that to you right now. So, getting back to these self-published authors, us self-published authors, we have to do everything basically. So what's the number one thing we should be focusing on, I guess, especially for beginners?
I would say writing. Writing and kind of getting books out there. And there's all these other strategies I've talked about. I'm like, oh, you should try this, you should try that. But I think at the end of the day, the more products you have out there, even if they don't go anywhere, the more you learn about the process, the more you have to offer. If you find what Kevin Kelly calls the 1,000 true fans. So if you find someone who likes your books and you have more to offer, they're more inclined to go check out what else you have in your catalog. So if you only have an hour a day, I would say maybe spend 45 minutes on the writing part and then maybe 50 minutes on the marketing part. And I've started to...
How much? Sorry, how much?
Like just say 1 hour a day, I would say maybe 45 minutes on writing and maybe 15 minutes on marketing, like as far as percentage when
Interesting.
You're just getting started.
I heard the opposite. You know, Derek Halpern and the 80-20 and all that stuff. And he says it's the other way around. Okay, everybody's different, right? But he's...
He's in a different business model. I think.
For sure.
I would say if you're, I would agree with that on one level. If you just have one book and you're just trying to build an entire brand around that book, and there's a lot of people who have done that pretty well, like the aforementioned Ask by Ryan Levesque, I think that's a great example of just he's put one book out there.
Yeah.
And that's probably a big funnel starter for his entire business.
Yeah.
I would say definitely for that. But when it comes to self-publishing, the model that I've seen that works time and time again is just you get. Yeah. Books out there, especially if you're a fiction author, you should just your brand builder is getting as much content out there that's quality as possible.
Mm-hmm. You going to make any forays into fiction?
I'm thinking about it for November, but I am not sure it'll ever see the light of the day. Or if it does, it'll be under a pen name, and I probably will disavow it because I'm
you
sure.
Started it?
Yes, I have actually. I've always been a fan of fantasy fiction. It's a kind of dark fantasy, so it's along those lines. But I'm pretty certain, and every fiction author I've talked to, they say the same thing. Your first couple books are terrible when it comes to fiction. So, there's almost that level of expectation that if I come out with something, it'll do well. And I don't want to I don't want to make my readers suffer through that stuff.
Well, I'm tired of nonfiction, and I did a book in NaNoWriMo last year, and I'm just hooked on fiction, man. It's just imagination, and I love it. So I'm definitely going to go into that when I'm done with all of this course building and nonfiction stuff. I can't wait. Actually, I got some stuff ready to pump out, but just other priorities right now. So I think you'll get hooked on it.
Yeah. I think so too. I like the idea. I've always been a super geek, and I've always loved the Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy. I loved that growing up. So thinking up ideas and creating worlds, that's all how I spent my entire childhood. Yeah. So I'm sure I'd love it. I tend to, especially now that my son, I tend to have very limited time. I have to be very careful with what I choose to spend on. So
awesome. Congratulations. Your son is pretty brand new, huh?
Yes, he's going to be 6 months in about a week or so. So he's,
all right.
You're he's in, growing. He's getting older before my eyes.
What do you call it? A Pampers fever?
I've never heard that before. Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, what do you call it? Diaper changing fever, whatever. Okay, back to books. But yeah, congratulations on your son. So talking about books, and you have 60 of them. So how do you sustain sales?
I would say it's really is a combination of a lot of things. So we already mentioned it, just continuously try to get content out there. I would say that should be the first thing you should do is at least set a schedule. I'm a firm believer in checklists. So I have a checklist for every single book I upload to an app called Todoist. And that's just the way I kind of manage a lot of my projects nowadays. Mm-hmm. And just kind of work through books. So that's how you spend the majority of your day.
Yeah.
But also I would say what helps me is I have an email list that we've already talked about. So I kind of frequently run fire sales, and I'll be honest, there's some real argument about the value of fire sales, and that's basically you drop your prices to 99 cents and try to get people to buy your book at a discount. So I'll find like a theme, like, all right, this is a summer book sale. I'm going to give away 5 of my books for 99 cents, and that's how I generate a lot of extra income in a short amount of time.
Interesting.
And then from there, I would say, so you're running your 99 cent deals. Now, also in the background is you're trying to get BookBub promotions. You're also, whenever you land a BookBub promotion, I've landed, I think, 4 now. Whenever I get one of those, like, special deals, like, I try to promote that book all over the place, like, every possible book discount website. So you have a really good launch or relaunch of that particular book. And then also at the same time, try the BookBub partner program, the Amazon marketing services. And just it really is a combination of that. And also what I do, and if it comes to the 80-20 rule, I'm not too sure this is a 20% activity that really generates a lot of your income, but I like to support my books that way. But I like blogging, and I have a whole website that I'm starting to build around my books, not only just around the topics of my books, but also generating backlinks to my website. I have my virtual assistant. She goes out and creates Pinterest ads or Pinterest images. So I'm trying to create a whole brand behind the books where I can use to hopefully support the sales of every time I come out of the book or old book sales. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that's something I absolutely recommend for someone getting started, but I know it definitely will help me in the long term.
You just touched on a bunch of stuff right now. Pinterest ads, have you tried them?
I have. And actually, I work with my brother on a few things, and he primarily does a lot of Pinterest ad stuff. So I don't know exactly what he's doing, but it works where – you want to promote anything on Pinterest, you want to make sure it's a good image or it's a good infographic or something that actually has value. Like if you've ever seen a good infographic, oh my God, I got to share that with my friends. So it's not, you're not promoting a book cover. You're promoting, all right, here's a section of my book where we talk about the 7 ways to overcome anxiety in your life. And the image itself actually has a lot of content. So it's stuff like that. And then you would promote that particular image, and that would ultimately link back to a page on your website that promotes your book. So it's kind of a roundabout way to promote books, but I'm kind of playing the long game with Pinterest ads where we're just trying to build up my presence on the platform that hopefully in a year or so I'll have, I think I'm almost at 10,000 followers now. Huh. So hopefully in the next year or so, there'll be 20, 30, 40,000. So every time
I
post
showing
an image
up in your sales,
I don't know. And as data obsessed as I am, I see that I generate about 10 to 15 book sales a day from my blog. So it's not a huge amount, but it's something.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned with just building up my brand on Pinterest and actually trying to ROI at this point.
have a super tip about that. Nick Loper has a big article about Pinterest and yes. traffic, and it's a very excellent article. And I tried it, and I did 9/10 of the article, and it works. And I'm really in love with Pinterest now. So I'm really mad, though, because I'm in Europe, and I can't use the ads.
Oh,
but,
no.
Yeah, but okay, but that wasn't part of his article, actually. So for you and everybody listening, check out Nick Loper's article about Pinterest ads. So, okay.
Yeah, actually, let me touch on that real quick. I would highly recommend checking that article. I forget off the top of my head, but just if you type into Google, just type in sidehustlenation.com
yeah, exactly.
and Pinterest marketing. I think you should be able to find it, but I use that as a groundwork. But to really drive home the point, I think it was 2 days ago, I got 16,000 visitors in one day from Pinterest. So it can move a lot.
Exactly.
It can generate a lot of traffic. What you do with that traffic is really depends on what market you're in, but it definitely can help.
Yeah. And it looks like they were built for sharing.
Yes.
I'm not even trying, and people are sharing my stuff. So, yeah, okay, I'm going to look into this, you know. Yeah. So then you said you have a checklist. I think I have your checklist book, actually. But then Todoist, is that the website that takes your $100 if you don't do it on time?
No, Todoist is just – it's a time management to-do list. Actually, it's a pretty good play on words. There's Todoist, but it's uh-huh. not Todoist. It's to-do list. It's a good management for any sort of to-do list that you have. So
uh-huh.
I kind of follow the getting things done models where I'll create a project for each aspect of my life. And then upload, all right, here's the next action you should have. And one of the cool things about Todoist is you can take just a regular text file. So say you have a 70 list of things. You just upload it, and each one of those lines, it'll create a little kind of checkbox that you just go run through that entire project and get things done. And kind of the benefit for self-publishing is you can create this little kind of project list that you run for every single book. And every time you learn something new, you just update this list and you just
– Oh, yeah.
And then whenever you have a new project, you just automatically just upload the template, and it just creates a whole system for that.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I love it. And I used to be huge. I still am, but I used to really be in Evernote. But I like to do it because it, for one aspect of your life, it really just does provide a great solution. And yeah. I think I pay for the premium, which is like $30 a year. But there's kind of the freemium type of model where you can do a lot of things for free. So I would just recommend that app.
And so todist.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And and if you just type it into your phone or tablet, you can find it as well.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I like your checklist book, and I suffer under bells and whistles syndrome, so I'm always looking for a sleeker way to do things, and always distracting myself with these toys and stuff. Like Google Keep is a really good one, actually. But I'm going to check out Todoist and try to, get a system going. So let's talk about your new course. Actually, you launched it a while ago, right?
Yeah, we launched it in January. And we've been – all three of us. It's myself, Barry Davenport, and Ron Clendenin.
Right.
The two of them I've worked with books in the past, so they're definitely great people to work with. So we launched it back in January, and we're all learning at the same time about how to promote courses, and it's way different than self-publishing. So
did you use Jeff Walker's method?
Yes, and this is what's good about it, kind of as you evolve as a business person. This is the one area that I kind of just followed Barry and Ron's lead, and we do promote it. But I think it's like one of the things that he recommends is a 3-part video series, and then the first piece of good content, second piece is kind of good content while laying the foundation, and the third video is just a kind of a light content but also straight a promotion of the course itself. So I did read his book. I've gone through a little bit of his material, but I would say Ron in particular, he understands Jeff Walker stuff in and out. But I know that's kind of sort of what we followed.
Cool. And so how did it go?
It went pretty well. We were happy with the numbers. I'm starting to become a little more cautious with actually saying the numbers for what we sold.
I don't have to.
All three of us were quite happy, and I like the fact that I actually finally was able to get a course out there that kind of goes through every single thing that I know about self-publishing, and we're in the process of adding as much extra content as possible.
Is every single thing you know?
Not every single thing. Because it was – right now, it's at like 90 videos.
Wow.
I would say every single thing I know for getting the book out there and published and what I'm starting to do is we're starting to try to figure out if we need course number two that focuses on author platform and sales, or we're just going to add some extra videos to it. We haven't quite decided what we're doing yet.
So, I mean, I guess that sets your course apart from the rest, 90 videos, huh?
Yeah, I would say so. And if I'm going to be perfectly honest, and I try to be honest as possible, my one concern is we just put a lot out there, and we wanted to make sure people weren't overwhelmed by the process and just stuck to kind of what they needed to do. So there's a temptation to just fire hose it and put as much stuff out there. But I do try to be mindful of like the 80-20 rule, that if there's a certain thing I'm not talking about, then I do feel that it might be nice to sell books, but I don't want people to feel like they have to. Like we just talked about Pinterest ads. Like, I think it's a nice thing if you have the extra time and capital, but it's not going to immediately move books. So I think that when you first get started, you should focus on the fundamental stuff and then just evolve from there.
Yeah. So any aha moments from your launch?
Aha moments. It is a lot more painful than I imagined. I'm trying to think of specific. It's been since we actually launched, it's been 9 months, so I kind of forgot the finer details. But expect the unexpected. Expect things to break. Expect a lot of product confusion, because I know there's our course and there's a couple courses that are out there that had similar scope, and a lot of people are just confused about which was what, and they're asking questions like, actually, that's not my course, that's somebody else's. So I would say overall it was very much a learning experience. I'm trying to think of specific aha moments. There is a value of having an audience that will follow you everywhere you go. So there's some people who just read my habit books, and they went on to buy a course about self-publishing, and you wouldn't think that these are anywhere related to one another, but you shouldn't be afraid to ask your audience. And I think that is the aha moment, is like, no matter what, always talk to your audience and find exactly what they want and how you could best serve them.
So you actually went to what you didn't think were book publishing type people. You went to that audience, huh?
Yeah. I figured if I send an email out or two and see the response of people, it couldn't hurt. And there are a lot of people that were on my email list because they specifically want to see exactly what I was doing with my books. It was more like they didn't care about buying the books, but they want to figure out what I was doing from a marketing aspect of it. So maybe that's why it was helpful. And there's just some people who just kind of always want to write a book, and they just didn't really know how to get started with it. So I would say it's a cross section of those two types of people.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah, cross-pollination or something. So,
yeah.
What about Facebook ads? We talked about Pinterest ads and Amazon Marketing Services, which is Amazon ads, right? And no Facebook ads?
Definitely for the course, we use Facebook ads a lot. Mm-hmm. And again, that's kind of an area that I kind of sort of know what Ron's doing, but I don't really. We make sure we don't try to trip over each other by doing the same thing or micromanaging one another. So
yeah,
he definitely does it. I have run Facebook ads for my books and they've done pretty well, but it was one of those things where I was spending an hour or 2 hours a day trying to figure it out. And I just didn't see the ROI on it. And I know there's some people that do really well with it, like specifically Mark Dawson. I'm sure everyone knows what he does. I just found that at least for nonfiction, didn't really work out that well for me. And maybe if I took the time to figure it out, it probably could be. But I tried it, but it didn't really do all that well.
Interesting.
I do like Facebook. I like Facebook. I think the ad platform is great for promoting content. It's one of those things that's, again, it's on my list. I just never quite figured it out.
That's cool. And you need to take my course. I have a Facebook ads crash course, and I'm going to build that out into, you know, a big course. But as you can see, I'm spreading myself way too thin, way too much stuff going on. And So what would you do differently if you had to start all over again? Or in other words, what do you wish you knew then that you know now?
I would say I would be probably, if I had to start all over again, and I would probably follow almost everything I did, maybe past the second and third book, I would probably follow the same model where I just find a market and write to that particular market. But the one thing I would do differently is I just kind of picked a broad topic like habits, which there's not really a defined market besides like Leo Babauta. He's like the only one I could think of off the top of my head who actually has an audience about habits.
Yeah,
I would probably focus in on real specific pain points. Like I know saving money, I always use that example in my course because I know that's something that people are always interested in, and mm-hmm. I would probably pick a market like that where I know my wife has a ton of experience about that. Hmm. So I'd pick a real specific pain point and try to find actual websites that talk about it and authors, and try to do a little marketing intel and make sure that there's an actual audience out there, there's an actual market, because I think that's really beneficial when you try to scale things up and run ads and try to build a brand around it. It's hard to build a brand around something that's a little more kind of nebulous, and that's really what the habits market is. There's no real defined market. So
that goes back to our validation, you know?
Yes, validation. Yeah. I probably should have done a little bit better job with that, but it also kind of gives me the freedom and flexibility to talk about a bunch of random topics that can sort of tie one umbrella.
Apropos Ryan Levesque, that's one of the big quotes in this book. I found it easier to make a product for an existing market than build a market around my product. You know, so, yeah. Okay, so you would do more validation. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Do you have a mentor?
I do not. I have a lot of people that I look up to. Mm-hmm. And I try to learn from as many people as possible. Like I have a couple of accountability groups, mm-hmm. My business partners, a couple of people I respect and follow online, like Pat Flynn and other people as well. But I wouldn't say I don't really talk to someone on a frequent basis that that kind of guides me through stuff. Like the only one I could really think of is maybe my dad, and I talk to him about business stuff on a frequent basis. But that's not really a formal thing. I just kind of go with him whenever something's coming up, going on in my life.
Well, you know, it's what every entrepreneur seminar you go to or a book you read, you got to get a mentor. You got to get a mentor. So I've got it on my list, and I don't really have one either. Cyber mentors, maybe, or benchmarks.
I think you can get by without having one. I feel a lot of times people say, because I've actually been approached on a number of times, and I do feel that most of the time you can figure things out on your own. There's a beautiful tool called Google. And you can look up, and it gives you answers to stuff. It's amazing. I know it's a kind of a flippant response, but I do find that most of the time you can solve your own problems.
I think maybe a better or a better compromise is accountability partner, maybe. You know.
Yes, I do 100% think that's important, and I have, I think at this point, like six different. Like I have one guy I meet every week.
Really?
One-on-one. He's my accountability partner, a guy from England. And then there's another group, including Nick Loper, another group that we meet every other week, the five of us, and we kind of bounce ideas off one another. And I definitely think
that's cool.
A way to kind of get feedback on what you're currently doing.
And that's a weekly Skype or something?
Yeah. The guy that I meet every week, we talk over Skype, and then the other group I think is Google Hangouts, which always seems to crash.
yeah, I have the same phenomena there. Okay. Well, so accountability partner, that's another good one. So I was looking in Todoist.com, and that one really resonated with me because what's it called? Constant improvement. So you make a checklist once, and then you keep adding to it. And then you do this for every book. So this is like your process.
Yeah. And I find every time I launch a book or learn something new, I'm like, oh, I should have done this when in this step way, like 40 steps ago, I should have like started the process of building a Facebook fan page for my books. Or so I'm trying to think of an example.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, maybe next time I launch a book, I'll do that. So I actually add it in the list, and I try to incorporate different things. Like I'm just starting to really kind of get a handle on BookBub ads and Amazon marketing ads. So you better believe next time I launch a book, I was like, all right, halfway through my next book launch, I'll make sure to start campaigns right away and start to promote the books there. So it really is a very much an iterative process. And that's kind of why I like self-publishing, is you could publish a book every couple of months and learn from the process and just improve it on next time for the next book.
I like the fact that you just talked about Amazon marketing services, because I've tried them, and I was actually in the plus for several weeks, and actually got one of my books up to number one in the category, which wasn't a too shabby category. Yeah, I got the badge. I got the screenshot this time, because I did a BookBub with this one. And it was number one for over a week, and they didn't put the badge on it. So I started a help ticket with Amazon, and they said, well, we reserve the right to put the badge on after several days, you know, to look at the trend and blah, blah, blah. So after I started the help ticket, then, of course, the book went down. I used Amazon Marketing Services and went back up. And then the badge, they put it on hourly. So if it went down, by the hour, they took the badge on or off. You know, it was crazy. And so what was your experience with Amazon Marketing Services?
I like it a lot. You really have to do a good job drilling down on keywords and authors and book titles, and that's kind of the secret sauce. You want to make sure that you're targeting the exact people that would be interested in your book. And it's a little confusing because there's two different types of Amazon marketing ads. There's the product display – there's the sponsored ones, which I'm starting to use now, where you can do on a keyword author level, which is really – it gets really granular, and that's what I like about it. But then there's a product display where it's just simply an ad that they show below a book in a particular category. So you can pick like the self-help how-to category or something really like super focused. I'm trying to think of time management as a category. You can pick like just the time management category and only show to those particular books. But I like doing it more for if someone's interested in this book, they'll be interested in that book. And just from a category level, it's hard to really get that drilling down.
So I'm a big chicken because I like I said I just did my first one, and I had several running, and at first some of them go in the minus, right? You're spending on the clicks, but you're not getting any sales. So then some of them started right off with sales. So what's your experience there? Do you turn them off if they're going in the minus too much?
No, as long as I'm not operating at too much of a loss, I'll keep things going. So they have – what's it called? The ACOS?
Yes.
I think it's the metric that they use. So if I look at the ACOS and it's anywhere 85% or lower, and that means you're actually losing money on a book, I'll still have it running as long as the overall campaign is operating at a profit. And for me, it's like I'd rather spend a little bit of extra money, get a reader that could potentially go out and buy my other books. And at the end of the day, it's really what I'm trying to do here. So I'm trying to build up that readership as much as possible and get them join my email list and blah, 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 all the stuff we talked about already. Just get them part of your overall brand.
So one thing I noticed about Amazon ads is that they're very slow moving. You start an ad and it takes days.
Yes.
And then I pumped up the budget to over $300. I used the option, use the budget as fast as possible. I made the campaign only 2 weeks long, and it didn't do anything. It still was just as slow as the other ads. But like you just said, 85%. For me, I think it's 70% because we only get 70% of the book, right?
Yes.
So that was kind of my key number there. And, yeah, I got everything below 70%. So, theoretically, I mean, I haven't gotten the bill yet, but theoretically I made plus or minus zero or a little plus. But, spend the budget as fast as possible, or do you pace them evenly?
I would say I would have to look at my numbers, and it's been a while since I reviewed my ad budget. But I think it started pretty small, actually. Come to think of it, I should probably go back because I think I said I had like $40 a day budget, which isn't a whole lot. The stuff that's doing well, I should probably jack that up to like $400 or $500 because I know that there's one campaign in particular that's doing really well. From there, I would say starting off, you do want to do the kind of – this is very much the fundamentals of paid traffic, but you want to start small, maybe $5 to $10, make sure that you're at least having a converting campaign and then start to add more books, more authors, more keywords, and just scale it up from there until – and then once you reach that point where they're all doing really well, try to spend as much money as you possibly can because the more money you spend, the more book readers you get.
Yeah. I'm really falling in love with them because unlike other things, you have the direct link between sales and spend. So you can see exactly with that ACOS you just mentioned if you're in the plus or minus. And you know, with Facebook ads, well, then you have to see, okay, well, how many did I sell on Amazon? And you don't have that direct link. And in Amazon, you have it right there in your dashboard. It tells you right there, you know. And so I'm really digging Amazon ads.
I like them. I feel that they're probably going to reach a critical mass where it's no longer effective, but you just have to keep on iterating and improving on what you do. But for now, I think they're great.
So critical mass, you just triggered something else. What about translating your books for other markets, other Amazon markets that aren't as saturated as Amazon.com?
I have actually, that's weird because you mentioned I just talked this morning to a agent who represents books in other markets. Mm-hmm. And I've done this kind of half-assed where mm-hmm. someone approaches me to sell a book in the Czech Republic or mm-hmm. in China, simplified or complex Chinese. I've actually just straight up sold rights. And you can, I've sold it anywhere from $500 to $4,000, which is, you know, it's not a lot of money, but it definitely every little bit helps. But there is a lot of opportunity. I just find that the translation market is so many small details that it can almost be a distraction from what you're doing currently. That said, I did strike a deal also with someone who translates my books into Brazilian Portuguese, mm-hmm. and actually built out a whole funnel just in the Portuguese language, and I built like an email list, an opt-in offer.
Interesting.
And they're all my web lists, so every time I come out with a new book in mm-hmm. Portuguese, I just have a translated email sent out to them, and they go out and download my book and leave reviews. So it is possible. It's just a little bit of technical requirements to make it happen.
So that's Brazil, Amazon, right? But in China, do they have Amazon?
No, China that would almost be like you're dealing with a traditional publishing company where they just take the physical book version, mm-hmm. translate it into their language, and then one day you just get money just shows up in your bank account. That's really what happened.
You sold the rights, a one shot deal, huh?
Yeah, it's like a one shot deal, and I kind of look at it as like found money that. All right, what are the odds are I'm actually going to be able to sell this for $50,000 in China? Probably slim to none. So
yeah, I'm wondering though if you might be kicking yourself in the butt later because how many people – they got over a billion people and maybe you'll become the hit in China and not have any cut of it, you know?
But then I can come out with book number two or book number three. I guess that's the beauty of self-publishing that if you make a bad deal with one book, just try to present them with another book.
So what about Brazil? Was that a one-shot licensing deal or it's an ongoing funnel thing?
It's an ongoing thing. It's just a straight-up 50-50 deal where she will translate the books.
Yeah,
I'll keep it in my dashboard just because I like to control things like that. But for most part, she writes all my marketing campaigns or any emails I need to send out or the Amazon description.
And
does
split,
a really good job.
Yeah, and you split the profit from the book with her.
Yeah, split 50-50. So just at the end of every month, and actually same with my a couple of partners I've written with books. I just I have my virtual assistant create like a little Excel spreadsheets of all what we earned, what we spent, that sort of thing.
So how do you check their work?
Specifically with the translation partners, we actually pay for an editor in that language to edit the book as well, like you would with any other language to make sure that it's actually what it's supposed to say. And
yeah, exactly.
I don't speak Portuguese, but I assume that an editor will let me know if something's not right.
I just got an offer. Somebody wants to translate one of my books in India. And I said, yeah, that's great. But how am I going to check it? You know? So 50-50. Okay. That sounds like a good deal actually. And for her, for damn sure. Huh?
I don't know. She puts all the effort in. I just collect the payments.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a great way to go because in Spain, Germany is the second biggest book market and music market in the world. So I'm definitely going to try to go there too. So, and you're doing Brazil and China. That's interesting.
Yeah, I did try Germany. I just also today, that's funny. I did a lot today. I was talking to one guy we tried with a couple of books that didn't really pan out, but neither one of us. We were just both really busy, but we're starting to really try to make a concerted effort in October to push a couple books. So maybe in a couple months, Germany will open up again. But it is probably the number two language next to English right now when it comes
to
digital.
Crazy, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So who is your favorite author?
I'm going to go with the standard answer that probably most people say is Stephen King. I love Stephen King. I've read all his books as a kid, and I would say some of the books he's coming out with now they're actually better than what he used to have because he's off the cocaine, he's off the all the drinking he did in the 80s, and his books are tighter and they flow a lot better than some of his older books. They were just complete stream of consciousness, and he needed a good editor back then.
That's one of those things that I'm kind of not so sure about with editors, because if you read like Stephen King or a Terry Pratchett, you'll say, Jesus Christ, did he pay his editor? He's not worth a cent, you know? So yeah, well, okay, Stephen King, and he's getting better and better, right? Oh, that's cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. I would say he had a trilogy that was more of a crime mystery type thing. I thought that was pretty good, and the sequel to why can't I remember? The sequel to The Shining, Dr. Sleep. I really like that book. That was really good one. Yeah. I would say, yeah, most of his new stuff, at worst, I was like, oh, that's an okay book. But I would say that's the reaction I've had for things that I've read of his in the last 7 or 8 years. It's at worst, I'm like, oh, it's not the greatest book, but generally it's worth the money.
I'm going to get his audio book then. What's it called, Sleeper?
Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep, then. How's your experience? Like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's the child, the one who had the shining ability, and the original one, it's him as an adult. Mm-hmm. And kind of that's how they continue the story. But it's good. Yeah.
I've been reading or listening to a lot of audiobooks. And how's your experience with audiobooks?
From a sales standpoint, I really like audiobooks. And that's part of my process is I'll have someone do the narration for each book that I publish. And I just do it strictly through ACX.
Right.
But as far as reading, I still prefer regular books on my Kindle. And if I do listen to something, it's almost always podcasts. And I like the podcast format over audiobooks.
So how are you or are you doing a royalty split with the narrator in ACX?
No, I don't think long term that's the best way to go. I know my numbers. I know that if I pay $1,000 for a narrator, I know I'll eventually get it back with the exception of one book. I've almost always made my money back. And I'm really careful about giving royalty splits unless I absolutely positively have to. Because, you know, they say 50-50 for the rest of your life. The rest of your life is a long time.
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it? Yeah. I did that with the book. And, it's just – especially if it's a low-earning book, it's not worth the – what do you call it? The bureaucracy with all the PayPal or, you know, the middleman takes all your money basically. You know.
Yeah. I guess with ACX, do they – cut the checks or is it you have to
I don't know because I'm in Germany and I can't do ACX yet. It's really pissed me off. I can't do Pinterest ads, I can't do ACX. I think I'm gonna get one of them VPN things so that I can just, you know, make it look like I'm in America. Or I can do it when I'm on vacation visiting America, hopefully.
Yeah, you can start an LLC over I don't know if I want to start giving legal advice that might be getting me in trouble. But there are ways around that I've heard.
I'm not that big yet anyway, so I'll be calling you though. Yeah, so you're right on. So, okay, my favorite off-the-cuff question. If you could eat dinner with anyone, past, present, future, maybe even dead, who would it be?
That's a hard one to answer. I'll go with George R.R. Martin. For a couple of reasons. We're both Giants fans, so we at least the first part of the conversation, New York Giants, it's an American football team. And we could talk about the Giants and how they're doing this year and that the fact they won 2 games and what their prospects are. But then the dinner would get probably a little insidious, and I'd probably handcuff him to a chair and make him finish the next goddamn book. It's been 5 years now. So it would be nice at first, but then I'd probably just keep him locked in that room until he finished the next book. I don't actually mean that for everyone listening.
That's all right. I've never read him. What would you recommend as the first book?
Oh, that's the Game of Thrones. That's the guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I've been the super nerd that has started the books back in 1999. So it's been 17 years now trying to find an answer to what this whole series is about. And it's gotten to the point that the TV show has surpassed the books.
Exactly.
I want him to finish the damn series. And he does write good books, but it takes him 5-6 years for each one. And it drives his fans nuts.
Yeah, well, you see, I only know him from the series. I didn't know they were books.
Oh, they're amazing books. They're probably easily my favorite books.
The book is always better, isn't it?
Yes, the TV show is quite good. The production value of HBO is awesome, but the books they're way more in depth. It's a richer world that he sets up.
Yeah, world builder.
Yes.
Well, I like them shows for sure. That's for sure. I watch them on the plane. British Airways has them for free, so I always watch that. Yeah. So back to your course. You've got probably – I mean, I've seen most of your stuff. your launch and all of that stuff. And like I said, you're my benchmark. So do you have any deal for the ZBooks readers for your course?
Yes. You and I were chatting beforehand. We can definitely do $100 off the normal price.
That's awesome.
And truth be told, that actually the course is technically not really being sold right now. It's like a couple of secret ways to get in, but we're actually officially launching in November. But if anyone's interested, wants to jump in early, just go to authority.pub/Eric.
Right on.
Just authority.pub/Eric, and you can get part of the $100 off. And I'll just make sure that I'll talk to Ron and make sure that you guys get that special deal.
That is so cool, Steve. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
I mean, because that is a pretty high value course, and it's not, you know, and that's a good deal. Thanks.
We try our best.
Yeah. Well, I could talk for 5 hours with you, but I'll take it easy on you right now, and I would definitely like to reserve a follow up podcast someday.
No problem.
Because I mean, every time you answered a question, I had three more. So, okay. So thanks for coming along. And, I hope I didn't bore you with the same old questions that everybody else asks you.
No, they're great questions. Interesting ones. Okay. You don't really, when you do a lot of these, you don't really get, unusual out of the left field type of questions.
Good, good. What is your website that you want to send everybody to?
I would say they go to that link that we just mentioned before, or just authority.pub, and you could check out all the different podcast episodes that we have lined up and a few other pieces of content. We do have the checklist that I mentioned before, and that's really is a checklist I follow every time I go out and publish a book. So just go to authority.pub.
And authority.pub/Eric.
Yep. So
authority.pub/Eric
to find the access to the course, and authority.pub for just the content. So
anything else, Steve? You want to say anything else to the world?
Just go out there and take daily action. And the reason I talk about habits is because I am a firm believer of doing something every single day. So if you fully commit to self-publishing, I would recommend writing every single day and finding some way to market your books every single day.
Thank you so much, Steve. I look forward to talking to you again. And thanks so much.